This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 18th of October, 2022. And these markets, Peter, I'm struggling a bit to stay up, to keep up with the plot here, if there is a plot. And I'm not entirely sure there is. I think we mentioned a couple of factors that were interesting yesterday in the derivatives market, enormous levels of put buying versus calls. And I really couldn't trace anything in the news flow that could have, describe or prompt the type of rally we saw yesterday and into overnight as well. So I suspect there's some kind of shenanigans here around the options exposures. I don't know what your take is, but regardless, it was a remarkable rally in the second day in a row where we've seen, if not third, where we've seen a violent turnaround in the price action. So Friday's dump turning into Monday's melt up and into today. So yeah, we've got some key earnings coming up. I don't know if that's going to set the tone here or if this is a sufficiently large squeeze that we've set something bigger in motion. There's of course always room in a bear market for big backups in the price action. I would suspect though that a bigger backup, just to my two cents before I turn it over to you, would require some kind of cracks in the Fed's forward guidance, something to give the market something to hang on to. And I'm just not seeing what exactly the market is hanging on to here, if anything.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I was scanning through the different cross markets price points to get an idea of what was happening. And I can't pinpoint a credible or a good narrative around what happened in other markets to justify what happened. So I think it sounds plausible with a lot of these derivatives. As we pointed out, John, I mean, there's a lot of derivatives buying and activity in the market and a lot of skewness. So I think it's a market that is just very sensitive to very small disturbances in the equilibrium and then sets in motion a certain reaction. And I don't put too much weight on it. I think the opening print in the Nasdaq 100, as you show here on slide 2 on the 7th of October, that big sell off day that really marked the beginning of the current small cycle we're in. I think that level sits around 11,500. I think that's a pretty natural level to look for on the upside if we continue with the momentum here. And if you look across the theme baskets from yesterday's performance, you can see there was really the high beta growth pockets like bubble stocks, biotechnology, green transformation, e-commerce, cybersecurity, etc. Really, bouncing forcefully. So I don't have terribly much to add. I mean, I think the playbook and the medium term outlook is still the same. We're in an earnings season. We're looking for that margin squeeze. Whether we are right on the hypothesis, we'll see. But that's what we're looking for. And then we are looking for financial conditions to get tighter. I'll talk a little bit about Bank of America and the U.S. consumer and how I think it relates back into the policy rate and where we're going from here. But that's let's take that in a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the one area where you could argue maybe at the margin there's a bit of a hope would be something like the Bank of England reportedly by the FT saying that the Bank of England is looking to delay QT. And maybe sort of the longer term hopes that eventually other central banks are going to admit that they can't really meaningfully do QT either. A bit of a thin argument. Regardless, we do have that story out. And I find it a bit funny that we're talking about sterling stabilizing because the Bank of England is going to delay tightening. What were we supposed to be trading the different central banks based on the scale of tightening they were doing? Of course, the reason they would be doing such a thing is to prevent chaos, further disruptions in the gilt market. I think that really the big thing that has helped sterling here in terms of stability and in terms of unwinding some shorts on sterling was the new chancellor's move to basically unwind the entire Liz Truss program. She looks like she is a dead prime minister walking, if you will, a lame duck, maybe on the scale of days. So we'll see. We'll have to see where we get further sense of direction there. But I'm as I suggested in my FX update, I'm not seeing sustainable sterling upside on any new developments there. And certainly, I don't think this is necessarily going to feed into the broader risk sentiment globally now that we've just sort of seen a basic stabilization of the UK gilt market. All right. Interesting relative developments overnight. So we had a set of RBA minutes, which clearly indicate the RBA is concerned about the impact on the consumer of these rising rates. They say they've been hiking faster than elsewhere. Their increments have been smaller, but somewhat small relative to elsewhere, but they have the monthly meetings. So really, the pace of steepening at times has been a little bit more rapid, to be fair to what they're saying. But this concern about the consumer, and we have to remember a lot of the Australian mortgage market is also based on floating rates. Plus, I think some concerns with China working in here as well. That is a dovish looking view relative to what happened overnight in New Zealand, where we had a hot CPI print for Q3, 2.2% quarter on quarter, 7.2% year on year, far above expectations. And that jolted RBNZ rate expectations considerably higher. Looking at a terminal rate, or not even a terminal rate, but just the rate to be heading above 5% already is something like April, and shifting the odds much higher to a 75 basis point move for the first time. They have been hiking in basis in increments of 50 basis points for their November 23rd RBNZ meeting. And we can see the effect on Aussie Kiwi on slide three. You can see there the blue line is the 2-year yield differential, which used to sort of loosely track, or the price action Aussie Kiwi would often sort of loosely track this yield differential. But you have to add on a commodity overlay. And I think that was where the relative outperformance came in late 2021 and early 2022 with the new energy crisis, especially LNG related, where Australia is quite strong. Big current account surplus developing in Australia, the opposite in New Zealand. But this locally here, this rate story, plus a few extra concerns around China, I think has really impacted on the negative side on Aussie, plus the dovish RBA. It looks impressive momentum-wise here locally, but I expect this is going to bottom out soon, this Aussie Kiwi move lower. I think for the longer term, we still have to consider the current account angle as very important. But an interesting development nonetheless. And then I'll just finish out the FX space here, jump all the way to slide six. And actually, we'll rewind a little bit and talk about energy. But I think mid-range here and euro dollar, as you can see on slide six on the chart, obviously, when we see yields coming off a little bit, risk sentiment going wild, you tend to see a weaker dollar. That is what we have seen. I mean, yes, if we get above 99, let's call it, in euro dollar, there's risk towards parity. But parity is a massive level on that chart. And it's interesting to see that even though we saw the dollar weaker, we're just continuing to see this grinding weakness in the Japanese yen. Overnight, Kuroda's essentially out defending the BOJ policy once again. There was a lawmaker that was urging him to quit, apparently, and he said this doesn't have any plans on quitting just yet. This is all going to come to a head at some point, I think, if especially if long yields continue higher from here. As the Bank of Japan, I think the most likely scenario is they're eventually forced down from this policy, that they won't be able to hang on for the recession and some eventual falling of rates, but will be forced off that policy. But elsewhere, looking at the dollar, whether it's going to be heading for a actual bear trend move, not there yet. And Sterling, I think its outperformance is probably going to fade from here. All right, and there is one, one area where we might have some hopes around Europe, certainly, and that is on the energy front. We're seeing these gas prices coming in quite rapidly. Look on slide five, the TTF, that 1 month Netherlands gas future, which is a key measure of where we are. Yes, I put a longer term chart here, so we're just reminded that we are still at many multiples of what is the normal range. Arguably, the 20 to 40 range is something more on the scale of normal at 125, but this is the lowest as of yesterday's close that we've seen since all the way back in June. European storage is essentially full. We have very mild weather here to start off the beginning of heating season. So, it really looks like Europe is going to manage just fine in terms of gas levels through the winter. There's US LNG gas on the way. And on that front, just that lower right hand chart, there is the US natural gas storage situation, which has really started improving of late. Natural gas prices coming down sharply in the US. Yes, we have some cold weather on the way, but the gas market, they're not concerned about it. And that is key, I think, for at least for the coming months of EU's energy security to be sure that they're getting plenty of LNG shipped over from the US. And then we had a bit of a back and forth here, Peter, this morning on car sales in Europe. These were out this morning. Pretty strong jump in car sales in Europe lately, which is somewhat encouraging. So, maybe the European economy here could show a bit of resilience.
Yeah, it's they're different. Yeah. One thing is that the numbers do look to be stabilizing, as you can see here on slide four. Both in the U.S. and Europe, they have been sliding in tandem since that small peak we had during the pandemic when we had a pent-up demand. To what extent the slide was about component shortage, I think that was part partly a driver, but then also there has been a weakening, I think, tendency to buy cars as work from home. Maybe that's reducing the demand for cars somewhat. We've had the cost of living crisis, a lot of different factors. But that in any case, the registration, new car registration is are stabilizing. And as I said to you, John, we have to remember that these car registrations, they come with a lag, right? So they car registrations with the current, I don't know, production time of, let's say, on average 6 months because of the still the troubled supply chain, indicate that these decisions or these figures we see here are based off consumer confidence and figures from back in April, so 2 months into the war in Ukraine and before the heat was really being turned on the European consumer from the energy side, and so we have to have that in mind. And then of course we can see here in China as well that they are boosting their new car registration quite considerably, a little bit at odds with what we have seen in other markets, and also the signs of the headlines we're getting that the consumer sentiment is weak. So I don't know how to put that together as a narrative, but whatever, that it is what it is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how. I was just looking, actually. I was trying to make the argument that how can you have strength in Europe? But then I was looking at the Danish retail sales, which there's a nice data series that's volume based, and while it looks terrible on a local basis, we've come down something on the order of 10 plus percent from the pandemic highs. We've come right back down to simply back on trend of where we were in terms of volume growth. If you connect the dots from prior to the pandemic, we just had this wild extreme of stimulus and people bored and buying in the physical world and not able to consume tourism and other services. So we still are going to be dealing with these pandemic after effects for some time yet. And it may take a few more months to sort this out where we are in terms of trend growth on things like that. But you have a couple of interesting stocks to watch today. Lufthansa, I'm looking at your chart there on slide 7. That one looks like it's flatlining, but apparently some decent results.
Yeah, they out with some strong preliminary Q3 revenue figures. They're currently 6% above the street estimates, and they're also raising their operating income outlook for the fiscal year. So the share price of Lufthansa naturally responding positively to this. But as you say, been pretty flat during the early days of the pandemic and throughout the reopening. So still tough times for airliners, and I think of course a combination of high jet fuel prices and changing consumer behavior is still an issue here. But it seemed like also from EasyJet and Delta Airline that the overall airline industry is still recovering and they're still seeing robust demand. So good for the airliners. Johnson & Johnson is another stock to watch today. Very muted revenue growth expectations, I would say, going into this earnings release. I think they may prove too pessimistic if we square it with what we have seen from other US consumer staple companies recently. I think it's basically just too pessimistic. I think Johnson & Johnson is selling very key necessities for the US consumer. I think they will prove to have, pushed up the revenue at the top line more than 1%, because think about it, with inflation running at 7-8%, that would translate into a real demand in terms of volume down 7% on a year-to-year basis. I don't think that's really the case. So I think there's an upside surprise there. And then Lockheed Martin, two questions, of course, here. The strong defense spending, I suspect, to underpin the outlook for the company. And then there's the whole question mark of, I think, on increasingly on the F-35 fighter. Is it really the future? You and I have had some conversation about this, John. And I think the latest very low-cost drone strikes on Kyiv using Iranian-produced drones, so they are used by the Russians, I think are showing some early signs of future warfare and how it's going to be conducted. And I think, to me, the war in Ukraine is perpendicular to what we believed, a modern army or a military force should look like, which is pinned on something like the F-35. I don't know whether you have any thoughts or comments on it, but that's just my thinking that potentially that it's not good long term for Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, I really don't know. To me, an F-35 quality aircraft, and I'm no military analyst, but just looking at what this very sad Russian military is able to muster in terms of battleground impact, battlefield impact, this is not the fighter that's needed for that confrontation. Maybe with with a China versus somebody else confrontation, that military might be able to come up with something on that level of quality. But yeah, like you say, the drones. Missiles, the strike capabilities in defense are very different than what they were in the past. I think there's something changing in the battlefield. So yeah, I agree with you. And is it high dollar stuff, ships and planes, or is it going to be more smart technology type of equipment? Spending could be the same, but it could be a very different mix of what that focus of that spending is. So yeah, I think it's a great narrative to follow up on as we look forward the defense theme, where that spending is happening. And how where the priorities in terms of spending shift in coming years, really. And then on the earnings front, we're really heating up here in coming days. We've got Netflix up today, and Tesla has got to be the big one tomorrow. I imagine that has to have broader consequences for risk sentiment tomorrow.
Yeah, Tesla is the big one we're looking for tomorrow, together with ASML, of course. You could argue that IBM is a little bit interesting given their large size in traditional IT spending. So, otherwise today, the focus is on Netflix. Netflix is has seen a lot of headwinds recently. I mean, the subscriber growth has slowed down. They have been forced to hike prices. They have had the terrible reports coming from from inside the company in terms of the culture. Just a bad feeling about the company and the content creation right now. Running excess expenses and cost overruns, etc. If we look at the Netflix, it's the company is expected to generate just between 4 and 5% revenue growth compared to a year ago. So a dramatic slowdown over the past year, and operating income is expected to decline as well. I'm really looking forward to this earnings release, also to get a sense of, is video streaming something that is going to be robust and defensive during an inflationary period, or is it actually something that is not a necessity and can be closed down? The subscription could be canceled by consumers. So that's the question I have. And then, of course, we had to talk about Bank of America. Bank of America's result yesterday was very strong. I think relative to its peers, the earnings per share were only down 5% year over year compared to, JP Morgan Chase, down 16, 17% over year to year. And I put in on slide 8 here the chart on S&P 500 financials. So it's not the pure banks, but that's because banks are not easily defined. So some of the commercial banks are in the banks classifications, others are in the diversified financials. So it's a whole mix. So keep in mind, the S&P 500 financials sector also includes insurance companies, asset managers, etc. And we have had BlackRock. So just look at the quarterly earnings per share there. It's really ticking down quarter by quarter, and it doesn't look like this quarter is going to be the rebound quarter that they were hoping for.
Okay, let's look forward to the macro calendar for today. But a little bit more interesting today, we have some of the more leading indicators on the U.S. housing market, which is in turn a leading indicator on the economy with a considerable lag because in the case of the U.S. housing market, we have 30-year financing that goes on there. And so people that are sitting, of course, on their mortgages and aren't in any rush to move don't need to worry about payments rising. But of course, for new entrants into the market, it becomes so much more expensive to buy a house when that mortgage rate is at 7+%, which it is currently, versus 3 to 3.5, which is what it was at the lows during the pandemic. So that's an interesting one. It's been collapsing, that NAHB housing market index, up today at 1400 GMT. I think it was 46 last month around, versus starting the year above 80. So quite a considerable move there. But again, a delayed impact. And we have a couple of central bank speakers. ECB Schnabel, she spoke very forcefully at a recent conference on the need to continue to hike rates apace. Kashkari, a voter next year, he's been quite consistent on the hawkish side of things. And we have more U.S. housing data up tomorrow with the housing starts and building permits. That U.K. September CPI reading is also up tomorrow. We do have actually a German ZEW survey reading out today. This doesn't really usually carry much much weight, but let's see, of course, if it's beginning to defy some of the very negative expectations and sentiment around European growth. And then, yeah, the Japanese CPI is up on Friday, but I'm really curious about the future ones beyond that September print for Japan, and that we're not going to see that until, of course, another month has gone by. So we'll see. We saw a really bit of a weak regional empire manufacturing survey out of the U.S. yesterday, but these don't carry much weight. We have the next one of those up on Thursday with the Philly Fed, but it's going to be a fairly light calendar this week from the U.S. as we await the key's monthly stuff, and not until the beginning of November, which also features that November 2nd, as you can see on the longer term calendar highlights, November 2nd FOMC meeting. It's an important one, and it's coming up fairly fast. It's only a bit more than 2 weeks away from today. All right, crazy markets here, churning back and forth. Looks like the risk is certainly in both directions tactically. Be aware of that. Stay careful out there. And we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.